talk tonight is in English, in case translation is needed. Zurich Tirgum. So in the groups today, the question came up, as it should, the right question. Okay. For translation to go where? Okay, there's someone with their hand up, I can't see who it is, and that's the place of translation. Zeh makom shel tirgum im achora im mishu tzirich. Tirgum Yeshef Sharut Sham. Okay. So it's come up in the groups. Actually, what's this all about? What's the purpose of sitting here hour after hour, shutting up? And in the group, there's no time for a whole talk about this, so we need to be, Simi and Sarit, myself, need to be short. So the title of the talk today is Short, which is, Tell Me About the Whole Dharma While I Stand on One Leg. And it comes, of course, from the Talmud, where someone came to Hillel and Shammai and said, tell me the whole of the Torah while I stand on one leg. And Hillel, who was pretty kind, he gave one sentence, and he said, don't do to others what you don't want to be done to yourself. And that's a pretty good summary. It's also a good summary of Dharma, by the way. It's pretty good. Because, of course, it's impossible to summarize the Torah and impossible to summarize Dharma. And what happened next in the story is that the person went to Shammai, and Shammai just gave him a hit around the head, which is exactly what would happen if you asked the same question of a Zen master. You get the same response, bah, what do you think? And I must say, in brackets, there is another kind of association from the Buddhist texts, where the Buddha came to somebody who's been standing on one leg for 10 years, and they had some similar kind of dialogue where the Buddha asked him, why have you been standing on one leg for 10 years? And it didn't turn out too well for the person who was standing on one leg. But that's besides. So, the Buddhist teaching is very down to earth. And it's not in the clouds. And it doesn't maybe sometimes feel like a high mystical spiritual teaching, which for some of us actually would be make more sense. I'm sitting here because I want to go to heaven. Show me heaven. And actually it's based, there's also mythology about this, or story about this, that the Buddha, after his enlightenment, came out into the streets, and he started to talk about heaven, and people didn't understand him. So he kind of, according to the texts, he moved the teaching to answer the question, why I can't be in heaven. what is it that's stopping me from right now being totally liberated and in the heavenly world? What's the problem? What's the obstacle? And so the teaching didn't ignore the heavenly world or the ultimate world, Hamuchlat, the beyond world. He didn't ignore it. There's a lot of it in the teaching. But a lot of the teaching is about, okay, let's go down to earth and see what's the problem. And in the end, again and again the Buddha said, all I teach is suffering and the ending of suffering. Well, is there heaven in that? And some of you may feel, I don't want to get involved in a teaching that's all about suffering and the ending of suffering. That doesn't seem very exciting. But we have to understand the way that statement was made, which is that the ending of suffering is the heavenly realm. The ending of suffering is nirvana or nirvana or total liberation. So in that context, it's not only suffering or difficulty of my back pain and the struggles in life and the viruses, coronaviruses in the world and everything else that's on our shoulders, but also the fact that we're not liberated is a form of suffering. So it's another view of that. And down to earth, it is down to earth. It is about our experience, the teaching. And this is, I think, quite specific to the Dharma, to the Buddhist teaching, that we can't look for liberation anywhere else other than my experience in this moment, because otherwise we're chasing rainbows. Easy to believe anything. But the Buddhist teaching is very specific, and I have to say personally, it's what kept me in, really in the practice of the Dharma for the last 40 years. Just that there's nowhere else to look for liberation except in the heart of this moment. This experience has it all. We don't need to look for it in heaven or beyond. It's all here. Someone came to the Buddha and said, a kind of small god that came to the Buddha one time and said, I'm the birth of an Indian yogi, a sadhu, and I was looking for liberation all my life. And I walked and I walked and I walked and walked to the ends of the earth. I walked across India, north, south, north, south, in order to find my liberation, and I died on the journey. And the Buddha said, well, you looked in the wrong place. You can't walk your way to liberation, because liberation is here now in this thing, 2 meter long thing that is born. It's in here that you have to find it. So if you're talking about one sentence while standing on one leg, I think a sentence would be that it's the truth that frees us, not our wanting to be free. And if that's the case, then we have to ask, so what am I doing here to undo, to open the truth? If liberation is in the experience of this moment, then what do I need to do to open the experience of this moment? And that's a real basic practical, down-to-earth question. It's an important question. It's the answer to the questions that came up in the groups. Okay, here's where we start. And the first thing is to understand that our attention is captured through conditioning, through daily life experience, through becoming an adult, through thousands of years of human experience. Our attention is captured to the purposes and the functions of life. So our attention is contracted into what I need to do, the to-do list, what next, what I have to do that I'll be happier, what I have to do that I'll be all right, what I have to do that I'll have money, what I have to do that I'll have love, what I'll have to do so that things work out, to prevent problems, to reduce fears. What do I have to do? That's attention. And attention is captured by all that. And we end up having a sense that we're living on automatic pilot. We're living functionally because our attention is there all the time. And there's another one-liner that I like, standing on one leg, which is, what we pay attention to, that's who we become. What we pay attention to, that's who we become. So, what are we going to do about the fact that our attention is captured by the need to survive and to live happily and function and succeed? What are we going to do? And the answer is, of course, expand the attention beyond that place. And here we are talking about awareness, mindfulness, waking up. In Hebrew, erut or hitpakhut. That's expanding the attention into a much bigger place than what's needed just to function. And when we do that, layers and layers of our experience begins to open. Places we've forgotten, places that we didn't know that exist in us, places that maybe from a child we haven't touched, places that are very big and primal, but also places where we need to know what's happened to our attention. Why is that? Well, where is my attention? So it opens the whole human experience begins to open up. And it's there we find heaven and hell. We find heaven there. But it may be buried under layers of conditioning, hatnaya. What we do here is, in a way, sit down, shut up, close our eyes, and expand the attention to places we've forgotten. What's our breath? What's our body? What's the mind doing? What's the heart saying? What are the crickets and the birds telling us? What's the sky? And what's the sky in our consciousness? What's the sky-like mind that we've forgotten to see? Mindfulness in the traditional language, Pali language, the word sati, has in it a quality of remembering. It's an important word. I like that. It's not the only translation, but it is important because we've forgotten a lot. In order to place our attention to where we need for function, we've forgotten a lot. And so remembering includes all of these things. I've been listening a little bit to some teaching on Yom Kippur in the Zohar, which I get, you know, secondhand. Like when I stand on one leg, I get some little hints. But there's something very nice that I heard from, which is that the Yom Kippur is a day very much like going back to the womb. When we close our eyes and we go back to a place of zero, we don't eat, we shut down, very much like a retreat. And in the Zohar it says, we close our eyes and we go back to the womb so that we see better. And there's something true about that for us here. We close our eyes, we go inside to see more. Places we've forgotten, voices that we really love, want to hear, but we don't know where to find them. As Rumi says, if we're not afraid of silence, we go down into the silence and we hear all the voices that we've been wanting to hear. On the way, we'll also hear the voices of difficulty, the voices of our conditioned mind, the voices that we, in a way, don't want to hear or we've been ignoring, but we cannot shut them down because they're the voices also that want to be heard. And many of you are experiencing those voices. Sit down, shut up, and the back hurts. Sit down, shut up, and the mind hurts. Sit down, shut up, and fall asleep. Sit down, shut up, and it's not working. It's okay. They are the voices we also need to hear. That's the truth that frees us, not illusion that frees us. The truth. These are voices too. We need to meet them. We need to know them. They're the voices inside that give us trouble. That's fine. We don't run away, we don't escape, we don't cover them over by going off to the Kenyon, the shopping, or the screens, or the WhatsApps. We actually stop and see, oh, those voices too, we need to give them space. And if we do that, we do open our attention more and more. And we may think, well, it looks like I'm actually just experiencing a lot of problems here. Restlessness and agitation and tiredness. And so what's the point? And the point is there is a truth in that that we need to meet. Because that's also our life. And if we push it away, cover it over, we're still in some contracted place. We need to allow those voices too. But if we allow those voices, we can also allow the voices that are bigger, the voices of the earth and the body and the cells and our hands that are fine and the breath that is fine and the trees. I remember I had an experience in Jerusalem just now, a few days ago. I was there for Rosh Hashanah, and I had an experience of someone that was doing something very crazy. But it reminded, which I won't go into, better not, but it reminded me, at the age of 3 or 4, my daughter was sitting having Clil style supper, lettuce, salad, and she looked at a leaf of the lettuce, chasa, and said, "Shut up, or I eat you." And what I saw in Jerusalem, this was pretty similar to that, so it's a bit crazy for an adult. But it did remind me of the possibilities. My daughter, not crazy, but she was able to listen to a lettuce that was talking to her and saying, "Shut up, I'm going to eat you. If you don't shut up, I'll eat you." And it was just so lovely as a memory that we are much bigger than we realize. We can hear many more voices. And it's good for us to open the awareness and listen to voices that we shut down usually. They're not relevant for ordinary life to go to our working day. But they are relevant. Our working day, one day, is one day of our life. Let's make it as rich and beautiful as we can. And for that, yes, listen to the other voices. People around us, the body, the energies, the feelings, what people are saying, what's behind the eyes of others. So underneath, there is a deep freedom which we already know and we tend to forget. And so the process of remembering for us is what we're doing here. And in a way it's something a little bit sacred. Ktzat kadosh. It's got a value. It's not technical. It's something important. It needs us to accept ourselves as we are, to accept the voices as they are, to allow them, to allow the voices in us to be as they are so that we can hear them. And there is something very, I would say, healthy about this, wholesome. And so it's mindfulness is not just a technique. It's also helping us to know what's healthy for us, what's good for us. For example, if we want to heal a disease in the body, we need to listen to it, not just to run to the doctor. It's healthy to support our own body. How do we support our body? By listening to what it's saying. It's just a small example. There's something healthy in this listening. It's not just technical. So my favorite quote on this, which has to be my favorite quote because it comes from my own book, so I wrote it, so I better like it. But I think it, in a way, summarizes what I'm saying, so I some of you may have already read it or heard it. I live in the middle of lots of olive trees, which have an amazingly expressive character that clearly shows everything that's happened to them. If a branch has been cut, or if the tree reaches out in a certain direction, or lumps are formed on the trunk, you can see it. The shaping of the tree is its memory, a response to conditions. The tree doesn't have a problem with that. And there is no reason why we should have a problem either. We are also just shaped, constructed by life. We are given a body. and it develops and changes dynamically according to conditions. And we arrive in each moment as we are. And the world arises and meets us as it is. Stories are just stories. Narratives are just narratives. And embodiment, being in a body, is just being in a body. If we let go into this flow of life, the wounds will dissolve, the scars will be softened and brought back to life, and we will find ourselves in the garden of the now instead of the prison of yesterday's. A difficult experience can come up, just like an unpleasant visitor arriving in our house. We can cry, but the next minute we also can laugh, and then it's gone. So that's summary in while we stand on one leg or sit on our cushion on one side. And I want to go to another place, which is also a kind of summary of the Buddhist teaching of what we're doing. And this is the Four Noble Truths. And why it's a summary? Because of two things. It's the first thing that the Buddha taught when he kind of, after his night of enlightenment. And he said, it's like the shape of a footprint of an elephant. It's very big. And it's bigger than all the other footprints. So the Four Noble Truths is a teaching which contains all the others. So if he said that, then we also, I think, can feel it's a kind of summary. First thing to understand about the Four Noble Truths, and many of us have heard about it, know about it, it's not a concept. It's not a philosophy. It's not intellectual. It's a discoverable truth. Again, remember the quote that I said, it's the truth that frees us, not our need or our wish to be free. Four Noble Truths are discoverable truths as experiences. And they're not noble truths. They're truths that make us noble. They're not themselves great philosophical truths. They're truths that make us great. So the first of them is that all beings, doesn't matter who, human or other, born into a body, cannot avoid suffering or difficulty. It doesn't mean that life is suffering. It means we cannot avoid it. It's part of being born into a body, that we're going to have joy and pain. And sometimes joy and sometimes difficulty. And that's the name of the game, being born into a body. If we understand it like that, that it's about our relationship to experience, it's not in life. Life isn't pleasant or unpleasant, life is just life. Our relationship to experience is where we experience joy or pain. It's in the meeting between this being, or an ant, or a bird, and life and experience. So of course we will experience it right here, together. We may feel the body is hurting, we may feel restless, we may feel we want to run away, we may feel bored, we may feel tired, we may feel anything, we may remember what a disaster there is waiting for us out there. All of that's possible. That's just being born into a body. And especially if we just sit quietly, things like that tend to come up. They're the voices that tend to come up. What's important for us is to see difficulty that comes up as raw material, chomagelim, for inner work, and not as, oi, just life is so difficult. It's an invitation to say, stop, look, difficulty arising, this is the time to wake up and look at it, because this is the experience of being in a body, and I'm ready to look at it at eye level. The mythology of the Buddha was really important that he met suffering. The mythology of the book of Job, Eov, same. The mythology of us here, we need to meet our difficulty, because that's the journey. When we meet the difficulty, we begin to peel it, to kind of cut through it to places beyond or under, places of freedom that we didn't see before, because the difficulty was controlling us. And then we were kind of contracted around, how do I cope with the difficulty? And our whole life we're busy with difficulty, trying to get it better. Here, we do something else. We allow difficulty, we sit quietly, look at it as it is, let it come and go, be with it, and see other things as well. What's behind it? Who are we? So we engage with experience. Main thing is, it's not business as usual. Business as usual is the problem. I think actually the planet is suffering because of business as usual. If humans can't live anymore on this planet because it's all heated up, there'll be a sort of written there, what's the cause of death? Business as usual. That's the cause of death. It's just we keep on and on and on. So it's very important that we pay attention to our difficulty as a kind of a compass, a direction. Here is where to look, because here is also our freedom. And that brings us to the next of the second of the noble truths, which is why we begin to understand what it is that's created this difficulty. Where is it coming from? What is the... And we begin to understand it. It's, we are feeding it. We've been feeding the difficulty with business as usual, with just coping, with just struggling, with just keeping going, with, in a way, ignorance. We just, like this. So the second truth is, what have we been feeding? What's happening? What's the conditioning that's made this experience difficult? Restlessness. Why does it turn up? From where? Many, many sources of that. I mean, we're not just talking about psychology, we're not talking about Freud, we're not talking about... We're talking about something also very existential. What have I been feeding that now I feel restless and I can't sit? What is it? What's have been happening? When we begin to understand more and more things about where we got stuck and how to get unstuck and what we've been feeding and how we can undo that. This famous quote, mountains are only heavy if we try and lift them. Pain is difficult because we've been carrying so much on our shoulders. And now we feel the pain of it. So what have we been lifting? What have we been carrying? What have we been feeding? What have we been investing in? Where has our attention been all our life? It's a good question. That's the second noble truth. It's an understanding of where we've been putting our attention. And when we can see that and begin to see that we're actually much freer, that opens to the third truth, which is the truth of freedom. And it's a truth. It's not, again, beyond the rainbow, 1,000 lifetimes, I might be free being. I've got to be reborn many, many times for that to happen. Or 100 retreats, doesn't happen otherwise. It's a truth, meaning it has to be there in our experience, just as the Buddha said. Our experience is the ground. The Four Noble Truths are in that experience, so our experience holds freedom. And we can sense it. There's places in us which are just really free and okay. Just sitting quietly, listening, sitting quietly. There's the sound of the crickets. There is our body just sitting quietly. There is the breath coming, going. There is a cool evening. Is anything wrong? So it doesn't have to be huge, great liberations, the third noble truth. It can be just, and I'll give you some examples in a minute, it can be just moments where we let go of what we've been holding on to. We let the mountain that we've been carrying, we just put it down. Again and again, in the very first instruction that you got from Simi yesterday, she used the word laniach, to let, just put things down, to let it be. That's the third noble truth. And the fourth is that this is our journey. This is our practice. And it is a journey, because every time we meet the pain and we understand a little bit more about where it comes from or how it is, we understand that we can look at it, we understand we can let it go and just put it down. It's changing anyway. We can pass through it. We can pass beyond it to the other side of it. When we know that, we're in a journey. And we go to the next level, and we go to the next layer. And that path is a very big one. We mentioned it right at the beginning. It involves how we are. It involves ethics. It involves attention. It involves insight. It involves many aspects of our life. So I want to give some examples how the Four Noble Truths might work in the moment. And I gave an example this morning about walking meditation. We walk to the shop. What's in our mind? Just the list of what we have to buy or what we have to do? If we feel ourselves controlled by the list in the mind, I mustn't forget this and this and this and this and this and this, we're thinking about it all the way, and we arrive in the shop, the super, and we don't know how we got there. We just suddenly in the super. But we've been walking 15 minutes. What do we see? How many steps did we know? How many breaths did we take? How many flowers did we notice? How many other beings, dogs, cats, insects, did we pay attention to? How many thoughts did we have apart from that? So we can see the kind of, and then if we actually go to that place, this 10-minute walk to the supermarket can be an amazing 10 minutes of our life. Why not? So you can see the difference. It's exactly that, the Four Noble Truths. Contracted mind, purposeful, controlled, conditioned, limited, to-do list, opened, seeing more, attention, awareness, and it changes our experience. A lot of us have experienced this in the last year or year and a half. We feel stopped by the virus, by difficulty. We haven't been able to travel. We haven't been able to. Sometimes kids at home, everyone fighting in the family, whatever. We've been feeling a lot of frustration in the society and a lot of fear. So here's an example which is more social, community example. And many of us are feeling fear and stress and anger. But some of us, especially in the Dharma, have been saying, it's so good that I haven't had to go anywhere. I'm sitting at home and for the first time I realize I actually don't need that much. I can sit under the tree in my garden. I don't need to go off to Greece and to fly to the other side of the world. I felt it myself. I've been to Tel Aviv once in a year and a half. I used to go every week. And suddenly I thought, what do I need to go there? What do I need to do there? Jump on a train and go and run and run, 7 hours traveling. Actually, suddenly you can look at things differently just by a sense of quietness. I don't need that much. I can sit under a tree, it's enough. I can just be at home, it's enough. And it's a kind of coming out of that sense of being on the track. And we see the Four Noble Truths in that, just in that small example. I look at where I'm at, I see where I'm in the habit. It's a bit painful to let the habit go, but I see a bigger picture and I can stop and breathe and rest, and it's okay. It's just the same journey. We experience it here in meditation is another example. Tiredness or restlessness, boredom even. Instead of seeing it as a problem, which is the mind that says, I want things to be better, I want something else, not this. We see it as an invitation. What's it telling us? What's this voice in me that's restless? Not to blame it, it's not a problem that I have to solve or something wrong or I should be different. It's telling us something. I want to listen. So, restlessness, unpleasant, first noble truth, clarity, looking at it straight in the eyes. What's it telling me? Second noble truth. The sense that it comes and goes, it's from conditions, and as soon as the bell rings for lunch, all the restlessness totally disappears, meaning it's not there permanently. It's just an experience coming and going, and there's freedom. Lunch. Restlessness gone. Tiredness gone. Back pain gone. And lunch. Third noble truth, especially the lunch is here. And the fourth, it's all one part of the journey because after lunch we come back here. We may experience body pain. It feels very, very real and it is unpleasant. It's not that we want to cover it over and pretend it's not there. But we allow it, at least to some extent, we give it some space. I think those of you who've asked this in the groups, you know, will have got from all of us a sense that give respect to the body pains. Do look at them, not to cover them over, ignore them, or immediately think there's a problem. But don't get into, I have to suffer more and more and more and more. At a certain point, say, that's it, yes, I meet the pain. That it helps us to practice the Four Noble Truths. I need to meet the pain, I need to see it and not run away from it, but see it with bigger eyes and kind eyes. And then at a certain point say, okay, enough. Now I'm changing my posture, I'm going to take a chair, whatever's needed. So it's not feeding the pain and going into it and giving it problem status and calling it and being a victim and saying I'll never do this practice again because it's just nothing but a weekend of misery. No, it's again chomer gelim, it's stuff to work with. This is what we're here for, to meet the pains and the pleasures of life and be bigger than, and to be open and to hold pain and pleasure. Comes and goes. And at the end, it comes back into our practice. And we begin to have a bigger eyes towards ourselves, compassionate eyes towards ourselves. And as we do that, compassion and a bigger view towards others as well. And now we're back to the beginning where Hillel said, what's the summary of the whole Torah? Don't do to others what you will not like them to do to you. We belong to the world. So although for the purposes of the practice we may feel a little bit in our world here, inside, we go in, but as I say, we shut the eyes in order to see better, because we are also in relationship. So I think it is good to end with the same quote of Hillel. It's relevant to us. That the more we kind of work with our inner world and have a bigger sense of our inner life, the more we will be helpful. Connected to the outer world. So that's all for the moment. Thank you. So let's take a couple of minutes of quiet. זמן למדיטציה בהליכה, ואז בשעה 9 יש את הישיבה האחרונה של הערב.